got on TV, started selling venues off, started creating superstars, but it was signed a deal with the UFC. So here we are. Nothing's rocket science, man. If you're putting the hours in and you're obsessed with what you're doing, it all comes in play.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. On the Entrepreneur Experiment, you learn the secrets and systems world-class founders use to master their business, their body, and their brain. On the pod this week, we're chatting to Graham Boylan. Graham went from being a plumber to managing one of the biggest MMA stars in the world and being the CEO of a major fighting organization. He is the CEO of Cage Warriors and he's the manager of Paddy the Baddy Pimlet. It's a wild story. Graham is one of the most unique entrepreneurs I've ever met. This is a no bullshit podcast. He gets straight down to it and he calls it exactly how it is. Here's my podcast with Graham Boylan. But first, quick thank you to my partners. Thanks to my partner, Square. Everything your business needs, like payments, point of sale, e-commerce, inventory management, chatting endlessly about the weather. Well, you're on your own there. Square, everything your business needs, almost. Visit square.com. If you're a regular listener of the pod, which I hope you are, you'll know I've been hosting the podcast from my Connick offices for quite a while now, and things have gone really, really well. So well, in fact, that I'm now a member of Connick offices, working and recording from one of their spaces. This means I can vouch for the benefits it gives to any business. On that note, Connick offices have given me a number of exclusive complimentary day office trials for my audience. So try it out for yourself for the day. Bring your team. No catches. Simply go to the web link in the description and enter Gary23, so it's Gary23, to claim your complimentary office for a whole day. It's a pretty fantastic offer. Thank you, Iconic Offices. Now, on with today's episode. Graham, welcome to the pod, man.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. You've got a jet lag boar in your hands here, but we'll do our best.
That's all right. Cork via San Diego.
Yeah. That's it's the commute that I didn't think I'd be doing, but I'm doing it. So it's a hell of a commute to get to work.
It's a good problem to have. So anyone not familiar with you, what do you do, Graham?
So I'm the CEO and president of the Cage Warriors, which is a mixed martial arts organization. It's the longest running mixed martial arts organization in Europe. It's been going since 2002. And, I've been the guy at the seat since around 2009, 2010. Long time.
How does that happen? How does a man from Cork become the president and head boss of the oldest European mixed martial arts competition?
So the short version, quite simply, is there was a group wanting to get involved in gyms that I had in London at the time. And that didn't come to fruition. And based on the dealings and how I handled myself with them on that deal, they asked me to help them with a deal to purchase Cage Warriors. So, because Cage Warriors at a time was a defunct organization, I had great history. I had a story of fighters. I had reputable names gone to the UFC. But it had become defunct and stopped running events. And it was, as such, it was a website name, a name, and a storybook as such on the shelf. So I got involved in the purchase. Yeah.
What happened? Why had it gone defunct?
I just think at the time, the sport wasn't there yet. Mm. It was a lot of people don't realize the sport is still 25 years old. It's still finding its way in the sporting, probably industries where there's like boxing, karate, football, soccer, Gaelic games, you know, football, hurling, hundreds of years, you know, MMA is 25 years old. So it just wasn't there yet at that time. So I believe previous owners are probably having problems, you know, getting it running, getting people to events, getting it accepted. You know, it wasn't like you couldn't get it on TV. It was had all sorts of bad names, bad reps, and rightly so. It was a wild, wild west back then. It literally was. Yeah.
And how did you get involved? Or what was your interest in MMA? Like, you forget it. Yeah, I'd actually even forgotten how new the sport is. Only when you say it, I remember 5, 6, 7 years ago going to events and they couldn't even get a GA hall to hold them. And that's only 6, 7 years ago. You forget it so young. So how had you gotten involved in it so early?
So I had a strength and conditioning PT studio in Common Garden where we used to do a lot of boxing with a lot of pro boxers. And I was training with them a lot. And I got bored of boxing, so I wanted to get involved in MMA. So I started training with a couple of guys in MMA. We fast realized there was nowhere for anybody to train MMA. This was going back to 2006, maybe 2007. So I got a building, put a cage up, opened a gym, told the guys to run it. You run it, you know, whatever the difference in the rent is at the end of the month, I'll make up the difference for whatever we didn't make. And we'll get to train whenever we want to train because we'll have our own cage, our own gym. Instead of putting mats out in the community hall and renting a hall every Tuesday and Thursday. So we did that. You know, I was expecting to cover the rent, but within 6 months, we had 300 members. So there was no covering the rent, and we were running 40 plus classes a week within 6 months.
So you had low expectations. You were like, look, just want to train somewhere. It'd be good. If it covers the rent, great. If not, sure, look, we'll have our own gym. That's wild. So you just basically scratched your own itch. You just wanted to do it.
Yeah, that was the plan. You know, we literally took a building, opened it up, put a gym in there. We make a go of it. You know, if there's a deficit to be covered, I'll cover it through other businesses that I had at the time. And it was just for us to train. But that was, like I said, between 2006, 2007, we kind of started nosing around there. And then by 2009, we had three gyms open by 2009.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All across London?
Yeah. Yeah, we'd across London. And then we ended up opening a gym in Ireland. There was a gym opened in Ireland in Cork. Then there was a gym. We took over a gym in Springfield, Illinois. Then there was a gym opened in Amman in Jordan. And then we had a gym open in Perth in Australia. Yeah, that was all in the, that all happened within 3 years.
You're going to have to fill in the gaps for me there. How do you go from, we'll get a cage, we'll lash it up, and then sure, look, global dominance, 3 years. How did that occur? Because, I mean, it's rare. It's super rare.
It happened, man. It was real. So, the three in London were easy because all the coaches, we were all living in different parts. One was west, one was central, one was east. So, and we all had little bits going on, training people in different areas. So that was quite simple. We just got the properties at a time. We all put money into them and got them open. So they were done quite quick. The one in Cork was a relative of mine who became obsessed with the sport as well. And he's like, he was involved in physiotherapy at the time and loved boxing and was getting involved in white collar boxing and such. So we got him involved. He ran and opened a gym in Cork. That was done. And then through that and through me going back and forth to the States, I had a friend of mine, a coach, Mark Fury, who he was involved in training UFC world champions like to Matt Hughes, Robbie Lawler, and he was involved with the Hit Squad at the time when I was back and forth training over there. And he contacted me and said, I've got a gym, there's a bunch of fighters in there. You know, the guys running it, they don't really want to be involved anymore. Plus, they don't know the fight game. So we took over that. So we were flying back and forth to Springfield. And those planes are not nice, by the way. There's like six to 10 seats. And then when you fly in one of them in February in the snow in the winter, it is not a fun ride when you get off an international flight from Heathrow to Chicago and then you jump on one of those little planes. It is absolutely hell. First time. And then I had one of our guys is in Australia, came back with the same thing. So we flew out there, spent a month there and left on the fifth week and left a 6,000 square foot fully functional MMA clinic behind us.
Where do you get the confidence to do that? Like, how do you go, yeah, that seems like a logical step. We'll go to London, Springfield, Perth.
Yeah. It was wild the way it happened. And we just thought, you know what? Fuck it. If it doesn't work tomorrow, we'll just go back and walk behind the bar again. You know, it is what it is. So we went for it. And the beauty of it all was, you know, I'm a qualified plumber, gas fitter by trade. And a couple of other guys that were with us were electricians, some were carpenters. We opened them all ourselves. We went in there. We locked ourselves in the building for 3 or 4 weeks. We arrived with our tools. We opened it. Once it was open, we taught all the first classes. We did the whole, you know, member meeting. And once it was up and running, we were on the plane back to wherever we were, where we were based. So, yeah.
That's wild. How did you, you're a qualified plumber. How did you get started work for yourself?
So I've worked for myself since I moved to London. I moved to London, I think it was 94, 95. I've only ever had a couple of jobs where I've had to answer to somebody. And they weren't the greatest experiences for me, being told what to do. They didn't go down well for the people that were telling me what to do. It wasn't a great place for me to be and to be told what to do. So I figured I just needed to work for myself. So I've been working for myself since I was 20 years of age.
So what you do, start your own plumbing business?
Yeah, did my own plumbing. Then we got into property. We were doing commercial and residential. Then we started getting into houses. It was always me and somebody, a friend or somebody who I was getting involved with. And then over time, it just became me. So we kind of moved through the chain.
What was driving you, Graham?
I think what drove me initially was when I moved to London in 95, it was still very much a situation where there were still signs on pubs. So you're a 19, you're a 20-year-old, right? You're coming, you've left Cork, Ireland, where, you know, everyone's partying, everyone knows each other. And back then, everyone did know each other. Mm. Everybody knew each other in this city, you know? And then you arrive in a big capital, the big smoke, and it's like, you see a sign on the door saying no Irish allowed.
Really? Even then?
There were signs on the door then, my friend.
94, that's not that long ago. Christ.
Yeah. I was like, what the fuck is that? And then you go into certain parts of the signs of the door, no travelers allowed, and you're like, this is fucking nuts. So, and then with that, you'd see people who are around you in London where, you know, nice cars, money, nice clothes. Couldn't get into these nice areas. Your accent would kind of stop you getting in there in certain times and places. So it's like, I think that's what motivated me the most at the time was like, I ain't going to feel like this. I ain't going to live like this. So yeah, got the head down and changed everything.
So what was the leap then from property into sport? Because you're living every lad's dream. I was going to say young lad, but realistically, every lad's dream to earn your living through sport and through a sport you love. How did that come about?
That came about, that actually happened in Australia. I was living in Australia. So I went from London to Australia after a couple of years. And I was living with they're still friends to this day. I was living with a bunch of Canadian lads. And they introduced me to the UFC on VHS. They had a bunch of VHS tapes.
Oh, wow.
And they introduced me to UFC. There must have been 8, 12 of us living in a house on Bondi Beach. And I got introduced to UFC and we were like, what is this? And they knew a little bit at the time, you know, they were showing me little bits and I was big into my boxing at the time. So we'd spar in the garden and we'd train together and just mess about, you know, just kids.
Lads stuff.
Just messing about. Yeah. And so the holiday, the 2-year stint of just figuring out what a young kid wants to do in life in Australia came to an end and I went back to London. And within 6 months of being back in London, I had a Volkswagen Transporter full of tools on the road. I was back around plumbing again, making money. getting full on. I was doing houses. And I think a year after that, I got a message from the same guy saying, we're all going to meet in Vegas for a reunion. There's a UFC on. I think it was UFC 44 or it was UFC 48. It was one of the 40s. Robbie Lawler was on it, and Chuck Tito was on there. And I said, there's not a chance. I'm too busy. I just can't do it, you know. And I'd actually just got up to a couple of guys working for me as well, contracting. And I was the Saturday before the event, I was sitting on a chimney breast in a house that I had just tore down because we were developing a house for to resell it. Eating a McDonald's. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. I was still working. I was covered in shit. And I thought, why the fuck don't I just go and meet the lads in Vegas? I'm making money. We'll just take a week off. So I did. Took a week off. Went and met the lads in Vegas. And yeah, on the way back, decided that I wasn't going to work again. I was going to go into sports in some way, shape, or form. So I made a little plan on the plane on the way back. On that Monday, Tuesday, handed what contracts I had over to a few plumbing construction friends of mine, sold all the gear, and I went to, it was called Premier Sports or Premier Global at the time. They were based in Bath. And I turned up on their 12-week intensive course to get certified in strength and conditioning, sports rehab, 5 days a week, 9 to 5. 12 weeks intense. I think it cost me at the time, it cost me something, $5,000 or something. Forked it out, packed the car, put my clothes in there, and I was gone. Came back with those qualifications, got a job in a gym, and I thought, you know, if I cover my bills, my food, and mortgage, I don't care what I make, I'm happy. And yep. Then from that point on, I just blew.
You're an all or nothing kind of dude, aren't you?
It's in, yeah. If you look, and I say it to people, no, I even say it to guys that come to us, and they consider the fight game as something they want to do. It's like, if you're doing this, you're 150% in, or don't do it. What's the point? Mm. You know, go get a 9 to 5. Get a 9 to 5 and just tap away at that, or go all in on something. And if you're all in on something, that'll come back. May take a few years, may take 10 years, but it'll come back. Go all in.
I love that. Yeah.
There's A players. There's A players and there's B players, right? You got an A player, he's going to get the best of kit to get the job done. You got a B player, he's going to use other people's tools. He's going to use everything he can. He's going to use everything possible that doesn't involve him committing. That's a B player, you know? A players just get it done. Is that job? Is that going to make it easy for me to do something? Yeah, give it to me, you know?
What was it about Vegas, Graham, that shaped you? Because that's a huge U-turn to just... not on a whim, but on a whim to go, and then on the plane the way back on, yeah, I'm going to completely 180 here.
It was a case of I was catching up with all the boys who seemed to be, I haven't seen them in 2 years, right? Because the last time we all caught up, we were on a beach in a pair of shorts and flip-flops, you know, cracking beers, just chilling out, partying. And everyone was talking about what they were doing, and I was looking at them all, I'm like, my hands are stained from work, from dirt. I've got cuts in them. And I'm like, it's not what I want to be doing, man. This is not what's going to fucking tick me over. And then I started thinking in the back of my head, what did tick me over? Where was I happiest? And it was always when I was either training people, training with people, or in the gym doing some form of art or some form of fighting. And when I decided to go back and do that, it wasn't the fight game I was looking to get into. No, I had to be convinced and persuaded to take the job of Cage Warriors back in 2009. It wasn't something I wanted to do.
What convinced you? Yeah.
The guys who were doing it put an offer on the table that was just like, okay, you're my gyms. It came down to my gyms were exploding at the time. And for me to take on Cage Warriors meant taking a step away from the gyms. And for me to do that, I needed to put people in place to run those gyms. And the gyms, they were doing well, but it wasn't well enough that I could take my off the ball with them. So they they gave me an offer that gave me people to watch over my gyms and help me grow the gyms while I was growing at Cage Warriors for them, and the TV side and everything else that went with it. So it was a case of my gyms wanting to lose an out. So that persuaded me to take the job. But it wasn't something I was like, yeah, let's go. Give me that seat. Give me everything there. Let me see what I can do. I was like, nah, I want nothing to fucking do with this.
So you were taking over basically a website, a name. What did you do day one? How do you even start something like that?
Yeah. So the plan that I had when I took it over was, we're not going after the people who are the names right now, because it's a short career. Mm. You know, the people who are the names right now, they're either going to do one or two things in 3 years. They're either going to go on to elevate and be huge names, or they're going to be on their way down and out of the game, and they're becoming coaches. That's how quick this turns around. Mm. If you're not at that highest level. So we went after, and I looked at all the guys who were turning pro. I wasn't interested in the guys who were potentially getting to the UFC or the guys who were on UFC's radars. I was interested in the guys who were coming into the sport, because we were going to grow from the bottom up.
Okay.
And it took trust. It took trust to get the industry. It was a murky industry back then. Probably still is a little bit, but it was a murky industry back then. It took time to gain trust from coaches, from managers, from fighters, that what you were doing was right, that you could be trusted. So we went in growing from grassroots up. And within 3 years, we went from nothing to putting in medical testing, bringing in blood work. We formed Safe MMA and helped form Safe MMA in London, which now medically regulates for the professional fighters, make sure that they're all okay before they compete. And got on TV, started selling venues out, started creating superstars, signed a deal with the UFC, started becoming a broadcaster for UFC Fight Pass, and here we are.
Simple. It's like your early days at the gyms. Just simple. Just 3 years later, bang, there we go.
Nothing's rocket science, man. If you're putting the hours in and you're obsessed with what you're doing, it all comes in play.
All right, break it down for me. First 3 years, how did you do that? You talked about broadcasters, stepping into the UFC. You talked about a lot of things there. How did you start? Day one, what was your priority? You were going in there fresh, blank slate, terrifying, but also do what you want. What'd you start with?
We start with venues, because back then there wasn't a venue that would allow you to put a cage in. You'd call the venue up and say, hey, I want to hire your venue. What are the costs? They give you the costs. What are you doing? And say, mixed martial arts. What's that? And so we're going to put an octagon in your venue, and we're going to put on some fights. What's an octagon? It's a cage. Phone hung up straight away.
Yeah.
And the conversation. Conversation's over. There's not even a no thank you, just phone drop. And so we spent a lot of time just trying to get a venue. That was the first few weeks, and we eventually locked it down with the HMV Forum in Kentish Town, where, funnily enough, another Irish guy who was managing the place was game ball to work with a fellow Irish chap. And we got it down. We got the show up and running, and from there we made that the home for a while. We did a lot of shows there.
And one of your big things was broadcast, right? You figured out this has to go on TV to become popular.
Yeah. Yeah. So the only way it was going to grow was broadcast. And then we ended up getting a broadcast salesperson in. We got little deals. Some of the deals were at the start, you know, they weren't great. They were barely covering any costs at all. They were barely covering the cost of the production, to be honest. And they weren't live either. They were delayed programming. So we do the show on a Saturday night. I might show up on Tuesday night, 10 o'clock type thing, you know. But over time, the production got better, the fighters got better, the sport grew. And then we started going live.
Has there been a moment for you in those early stages where you're like, I've cracked it here. We're on a winner, like, because Cage Warriors now is seen as one of the premier brands in Europe and globally, and a massive stepping stone to the UFC. So was there an early moment for you like, yeah, I made the right decision here?
No. Absolutely not.
Love the honesty.
Absolutely fucking no way was there a moment when I was like, yeah, we made the right decision now. It's a roller coaster to be involved in, okay? Because I'll give you an example. We did a show in Jordan once upon a time. We're on a plane. The team is on a plane on Sunday, probably arriving Monday or early Monday morning, arriving Monday afternoon in Jordan, in Amman, Jordan. All the fighters are arriving Tuesday. There's like a 10-fight main card with probably 5 or 6 Middle Eastern amateur fights on as warm-up fights. Venue is sold out, 2,500 people.
Wow.
We get off the plane, you know, you get to the hotel, you get some Wi-Fi, and 5 fights are gone through injury. Now, where are we replacing 5 professionals in Amman, Jordan, in the Middle East? We just arrived for the show. The show's on in 5 days. So that just gives you an idea of what could actually, the little bits that can go wrong and the moving parts that can go wrong and how many moving parts there are. And the craziest thing mentioning Jordan, what jumps into my head now is we did another sold out show, and we did a few sold out shows in Amman, Jordan. Once upon a time, we had a snowstorm in a desert where we soaked the venue up and no one could get to the venue because the fucking streets were covered in snow. And the government were using JCBs trying to clear the streets to get the city moving. Yeah.
Live sport, live venues, live TV. You picked all the holy trinity of complex stuff, didn't you?
It's absolutely madness. I'm telling you, there's a book there to the complications and the moving parts of what we've had to deal with to keep Cage Warriors going the way it is.
But you obviously love it, man. You're obviously good at it and you love it.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge. And the team we have been there for a while. You know, people come in, they don't come in and leave, they come in and stay. It becomes something that it gets you out of bed in the morning, but it gets you out of bed for the right reasons. It doesn't get you out of bed because, oh shit, there's something wrong. It gets you out of bed because let's do this. Let's get this done. You know, because at the end of the day, we're putting on a platform that basically makes dreams become reality. You know, there are guys fighting in the Cage Warriors octagon this weekend, and, you know, 10 fights, 20 fighters, 5 of them will be in the UFC within 18 months. So that's making dreams become reality. And that's what we do. And then, you know, I don't feel I've worked a day, even though we work nonstop. You know, I don't feel like I've worked a day doing this.
I think that's a dream. That's a dream for every person listening. If they're starting their own business, I think a lot of people forget that. They forget that you're starting your own business because you want to work for yourself. You want to have this freedom. A lot of people make a cage, a prison of their own making. They just go down the path like you were with the plumbing. Some people just don't stop to think, where is this going to be in 5-10 years? Like, and scratch that passion. Mm-hmm. You talked about the UFC there. How did that kind of like relationship come about? Because you're synonymous now with the UFC, and a lot of your fighters, we'll talk about Paddy in a few minutes, but a lot of your fighters have made that leap very successfully.
Yeah. So we started, I started working with the UFC a while back. I think the first person in my existence in the sport that I put into the UFC, I believe, would have been Dr. Rosie Sexton. We put her in the UFC. And then things moved on from there, and the relationship grew from there. But when we started developing the amount of talent that we had developed and the amount of people that we started sending to the UFC, it became pretty evident where all the talent was coming from in Europe. And official or not, it's pretty difficult to deny the fact that Cage Warriors was producing the hottest talent in Europe in the sport. And 2016, obviously UFC launched their own broadcasting platform, which is UFC Fight Pass. And we were one of the first organizations on there due to the amount of talent we're creating for them. And also due to the production levels, you know, every show we get better, every show the production lifts. And it's gotten to a point now where it's pristine. You could watch a Cage Warriors show now and be absolutely blown away by the production of that. And we get that in the States. We launched in the States during the pandemic. That was all going down. And we launched, I think, 4 weeks after that, those travel borders opened up in California. And everyone thought they were coming to some small show, but when they came in, they were absolutely blown away by the production that we put on. So, yeah, that relationship's quite strong. And I say to everybody who doesn't know, if you were to put it in basketball terms, you know, Cage Warriors would be the NCAA to the NBA, you know, or if you want to look at it in a NFL American football terms, well, we would be the draft. You know, we create the draft every year. That draft is there. Pick 1, 2, 3, and 4. They're all probably coming from Cage Warriors.
There's power in that. So, there's huge power.
Yeah.
What do you put that down to? Talent? You talked a lot about talent, talent spotting. Like,
that comes down to talent, but it also comes down to how that talent is developed.
Yes. Talk to me about that.
You know, because that talent could fight anywhere. And I say the same thing about coaches too. You know, when you get single breakout superstars, those fighters, those athletes, no matter what sport it is, they could be with any coach in the world.
Mm.
They could have walked into any gym in the world. Yeah, they need the discipline. Yeah, they need the basic training. But there's no one person responsible for that individual. That individual is Pat's destiny. They're always going to be a superstar. There's very few of them. So any names that you were to spit out to me now in terms of superstars within MMA, you can be 9 times out of 10, no matter who they're with, no matter who trained them, they're going to be that person anyway. Because if it's down to a specific coach or a gym or a platform, then why don't you just create another 100 of them? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The God-given talent is it's that person is slapped by that tree once on the way down. It doesn't happen every day, you know.
That's the magic of MMA, though, isn't it? That's why MMA is such a magic sport. Like, there is just such a special streak running through it. What do you look for in a fighter when you're looking? Because obviously you've got an eye. What are the things that mightn't be very obvious? Obviously, you know, fight talent is one thing, but what else do you look for?
We obviously look for, is this person, obviously, it changes over the years, okay? Previously, we were looking for killers. Previously, we were looking for guys who, you know, am I intimidated by you? Are you someone I look at and think, holy fucking shit, I would not want to fight this guy, you know? Because that brings eyeballs, that brings people wanting to know, that brings curiosity. Okay. Then it went to the point where it was like, well, it's changed. People now want the guy next door who can take out the guy who looks like he's going to kill him. Okay. So now we're on that little ride of, now we're looking at athletes. Now we're looking at the guy next door, of the guy that wears the glasses, who he takes the glasses off and he fucks that guy up who everyone thinks is going to absolutely destroy him. Okay. And then social media comes along. Now we're looking for a guy who's, you know, is everybody looking at him on social media? Has this guy got a following? Does anybody even care? Because you can have the guy next door. You can have the guy who looks like he's going to run through a brick wall and take you off. But does anybody care?
Is that where we are now?
That's where we are now. We're right there now, because there are talented guys all over the world. There are guys fighting in organizations that, those organizations are not getting the type of exposure needed to boost these guys. But nobody cares. Nobody cares, because
is that the McGregor effect?
It could be a McGregor effect. You know, Conor completely smashed that ceiling. There was a ceiling where guys could reach and they could touch it. Conor came in and just ran through that with a bulldozer, smashed it. It's not there anymore. You can go as high as you want now, but you need to have all those attributes. You need to have the marketing. You need to be able to talk. You need to have people who give a shit. They want to hear what you're listening. They want to hear what you're saying. They want to listen to what you're saying. And once all that's done, you then got to go in the octagon and be able to fucking fight. So you know what I mean? It's evolved over time. And to bring us right back to where we started, it's 25 years old. It's 25 years old, you know? It's we're now, I believe, we're now in the generation of MMA where 10 years ago, those kids were playing MMA on Xboxes, on PlayStations, whatever they're playing them on these days now. Those guys are now in the pub. Those guys are now having a pint. Those guys are now working full-time jobs. They grew up with MMA.
Yeah,
we exactly. didn't. Yeah. We didn't. It was forced on us. It was forced on our parents.
Yeah.
It was forced on the generations older than us. But a generation sitting in the pub, going out clubbing now and, you know, getting into their working career and on fucking TikTok, MMA is part of their life. You know, a mobile phone was part of our life growing up. It wasn't part of our parents' life growing up. You know what I mean? So MMA is 25 years old. So basically the generation of people who played this on games in school who are now out of uni, now MMA is normal. Now it's starting. Now the starting point begins because the generation are now adults where it's part of their life. Boxing is part of mine. When I watch boxing, it was on the TV all the time, you know?
A friend of mine has an amateur MMA gym up in Oma, Jerry Poltrack, and he put on an event just before Christmas, and the standard was ridiculous. Because I've gone to a lot of amateur events, and it can be, you know yourself, you've been to, like, it can be very up and down, but there was these young guys, and it's exactly what you said there, 17, 18, 19, absolute spectacular, the skill level, and I talked to a few of the coaches, like, what's the story? All these little killers, and they're like, they've been doing it 10 years, man. I was like, makes sense. They've been doing it since they're 6, 7. And they're just coming of age now into that. Are you seeing like a massive uptick in skill level?
Yeah. Even the difference in fighting, you know, we have an MMA academy that we kicked off recently where we did, there were open global trials. We did it 2 days in Asia where we had, probably some of 200 people apply. And we selected 13 guys. And then we went to London, we did Cage Warriors New Year's Eve in London this year. And then the week after we did an open trial where we selected 11 out of 90 something guys. And those guys are now training as a team full time in San Diego.
Wow.
And the skill level of these guys is just ridiculous. You know, the way they're able to blend their striking with their jiu-jitsu, and they're being taught more wrestling, and just the way they're thinking and their attitude towards their training, towards their strength and conditioning, towards drilling moves. It's like, it's not what went on over the years. It's evolving. And again, bringing us right back. We're in a sport that's 25 years old, and there's a small circle of people writing the foundations of what's going to be there for generations to come.
Is that Cage Warriors, or is that yours, or what's the MMA Academy?
So the MMA Academy is something that is called season one. It's a documentary series where we're doing a 8-episode documentary, which will probably go out on, I don't know, Amazon or ESPN or something when it's finished, where we select 12 guys from open trials. We train them for 12 weeks. They fight. And each guy gets the opportunity to win a $25,000 endorsement deal to help fund his training for the next year and fight in Cage Warriors and start getting developed to achieve his dream like we do.
Class. It's genius. Mm. Talk to me about Paddy. Mm. Paddy the Baddie, he is the name. Even if you're not an MMA fan, I think everyone's going to recognize that name. Where did he come from? He just exploded on the scene.
Paddy's been around a long time. Paddy's been fighting cage warriors since he was 18.
Yeah.
He's been in there with all the guys that have come through cage warriors. He's grew up on cage warriors, and he became a man about 3 years ago. He just blossomed and became a man. Just overnight became a man and took over the scene. You know, we got him a UFC contract, went in there, blew the place up. And people can see who that kid really is. You know, he's got a huge, huge heart, cares about everyone. Typical Liverpudlian, you know, hearts on the sleeve, will tell you how he's feeling. And he's unapologetically himself. He's a good kid.
It's exactly what people want, though, right? But it's what you described, yeah. Right? Because he ticks all the boxes, right? Elite level athlete, kind of looks like the guy next door, absolute killer, the most entertaining fighter probably in the roster right now. So he ticks like...
And everybody wants to hear what he has to say.
Exactly. You bagged yourself a unicorn. Where'd you find him?
There you go. Yeah. But, you know, they're few and far between, and when they do come along, they blow up. And as long as they can fight, that lasts, you know. So he'll do good. He's just had an operation at the moment. He had an operation Monday last week. So he's had a bit of fragment taken out of his ankle. So he should be back probably around September, I'd imagine, maybe August, September.
How far can Paddy Pimlick go in the sport? Life, how far can Paddy the Baddy go in the sport?
He can go as far as he wants to take it. And we'll say that for anybody who we work with, you know. Paddy is potentially a top 10 athlete. Where he goes after that is his choice. His skill set is ridiculous. But like every mixed martial artist, they want to be high level at everything they do. So sometimes you see guys who would, you know, they might leave their greatness and what skill set they have to try and figure something else out. And they may look sometimes like, okay, he hasn't quite got that, but, and then they won't let that go. They'll stay on it. And this is for all fighters, not just Paddy. They'll stay on that. But I think Paddy, using his jiu-jitsu, could potentially go all the way to the top. Yeah.
Who is the other fighter or two that you're looking at going there? They could go all the way and take a belt. Who else are you looking at, either in Cage Warriors or in the UFC right now?
There are quite a few going through. I think. It's hard when you're put on the spot on the show on a podcast to pick a name, and then you say one name, and then you get a bunch. My phone would blow up as soon as you put this podcast.
That's what
up.
I'm hoping. That's what I'm hoping. I'm trying to get the engagement,
yeah.
Man.
Give me the engagement. I don't want to.
Yes, they're all your favorite children. They're all your favorite children. I get it, Graham. I get it. You're going to sit on that fence, but like, you know, there's a couple of big names coming out there. Like, you know, there's a couple of big names popping up. Ingari's popping off. There's a few others that are getting a lot of exposure right now.
Ian's done good. Ian's had a Cage Warriors belt. He's now, I think he's 3-0 or 4-0 gone into the UFC. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how his career turns out and where he goes as he starts climbing the ranks. And who else is going through there? Jack Shore is another one who I'd like to see do things in the UFC. He's either had one loss in the UFC today. He's fighting this weekend. You got Jai Herbert fighting this weekend as well.
Yeah.
And I think one that's going to be a very interesting kind of a lay of the land fight this weekend is in London in the UFC is Christian Leroy Duncan. He makes his debut this weekend at the UFC. And that's something that we'll find out because he ran through everybody at Cage Warriors. Like there was nobody good enough to give him a fight. He was that good. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he compares on that bigger stage Saturday night as well.
What's the future hold for you as a entrepreneur, Graham? What do you want?
Rest. No more flights. No more airports. Just home, the dog, and training. No more airports. Just leave me at home. Let me do everything by the phone.
Well,
That's what the, that's
unless
what the future
you're going to cause another pandemic. I don't think that's in the future for you. What's really in the future? What do you want, Graham? What's success for you? What is the big picture success?
The big picture success is actually seeing everybody around you being okay. That's the big picture success. Everyone around you is good. Your friends are good. Your family are good. And you're living a comfortable life and you're not stressing or needing to get anything done through necessity. You're doing things because you want to do them. That's success. You're doing things because you want to do them. You won. You're doing things because you have to do them. You're still in the game. So, yeah, we'll see what that weighs up. But my objective in the short term, my short term goals are to kiss airports goodbye. So if we can get some kind of beam me up, Scotty play into action, then that's what I'm looking at right now, man. That's what I'd like. So if Elon Musk is watching this podcast, and you get some kind of pod available where I can just get into a push a button and be where I need to be rather than being in airports for 20 hours at a time.
I think the private jet is more realistic now, Graham, in the short term. But look, we'll let that might just be the jet lag talking. What Cage Warriors gone global, right? You've moved to the States. Was that a result of Cage Warriors growth or was that something you wanted to do personally?
No, it was a personal thing. There was no interest in bringing Cage Warriors to the States when I first went. But when I went to, when I moved to San Diego after 18 months of living and training there, I realized there was nothing there for professional athletes. There was nothing there to develop them. And there was a lot of them there. It's kind of a bit of a hub. For professional fighters, but there was nowhere there for them to compete. There was no platform there. So we put on, as an exercise, we put a show on a month out of the pandemic, zero marketing spend. I think it was like 9, maybe 10 pro fights, and we sold the show up. Sold it out 2 weeks before the show. And since then, we've had 6 sold-out shows in San Diego in a period of less than 18 months, I believe.
Whoa.
Maybe just over. But that was never the purpose. San Diego for me was, I'll go, I'll hang out there, I'll train there, I'll come back here for work. That's where I break away from everything. That's where I lie down. That's where I sleep. Nobody knows what's going on. Do a little bit of surf, do a little bit of jiu-jitsu, hang out with the dogs, do the work in the afternoon when everyone's asleep and come back here and do the shows. That quickly fucking twisted up on its ass and now the show's over there as well.
You're your own worst enemy, man.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that's taking me. I'm nearly 50 now and I'm slowly starting to realize the only enemy I have is myself.
That's deep. That's deep, dude. You're coming back to Dublin. More importantly, you're bringing the show back to Dublin. When's that on?
Yes. We're coming back April 29th to the 3 Arena. And we'll have Reese McKee but Reese McKee and Jimmy will unify their belts in that welterweight division in Cage Warriors, which is a huge, huge fight. It's a huge fight for Jimmy. You know, he's at the tail end of his career. He wants to finish as a champion. And it's a massive fight for Reese because it's one step closer to going back to the UFC for him. So
I've watched Reese a lot. I've been lucky enough to see him fight live a good few times. I think he got a raw deal in the UFC.
Yeah, he didn't get the... So look, some guys go into the UFC and... for all failing purposes, they get good fights.
Yeah.
You know? And that all comes down to timing of who's available. Mm. It all comes down to who hasn't had a fight for months and needs a fight now. And it comes down to what the rotation of that roster and who's in that rotation at any given time of who you're going to end up with. Because they're not going to be setting fights up and planning guys to fight each other when we're new into the UFC. The planning of who's fighting each other happens in the top 10. Below that, it's a pecking order system. So once that rotation comes around, then Reese just got caught up in a rotation that, you know, just didn't work out for him at that time.
Yeah, there's a big kind of conspiracy theory. Oh, you know, this person got that because of this. When in reality, it's like you said about a man, like you just got unlucky. you know, you just get a bad time. So we got a couple of questions coming in.
And look, there are other guys who have gone in there and they've got a good run for 5 or 6 fights, you know, and that helped them, but other guys didn't. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Yeah, there's no secret hand guiding you. We had a couple of questions sent in from people. Niche question, but any thoughts on what can be done to increase mainstream non-participatory viewership of jiu-jitsu? So how can you grow jiu-jitsu into the mainstream? Or can you?
They got to change it to finishes. They got to put money on. Yeah. I said this before. You got to, you know, if you've got a jiu-jitsu tournament on and you put, say, I don't know, say put £1,000 on the clock. And as soon as that fight starts, that jiu-jitsu fight starts, that 1,000 starts clicking away £1 at a time. You're going to get a guy to jump in and try and finish that before that gets done lower. I've said that for years. As soon as if they can see it, money going down rather than time, maybe they're going for finishes rather than trying to position win in jiu-jitsu.
I love that. That's total sense. Because you do,
it changes everything.
But even when you're
fucking everything.
But even as an MMA fan and you watch jiu-jitsu, and even if you've done jiu-jitsu, it's boring as balls to watch. You're like, oh, he got a point. Oh, good. Oh, he got a point. He got a point. And you're just like, oh, yeah. Where are we going? I think that's.
But if you're sitting at home and you're watching, say $10,000 go to $9,000, go to $8,000, go to $7,000, go to $6,500, go to $6,000, dude. If you're on the mat there and you're in a fucking gi, you're not going to be stalling to try and if you don't get that clock stopped, you ain't winning any money.
Yeah.
So you don't want that clock to go fucking anywhere.
Sounds like we've got a spin-off on our hands here.
Yeah, I was going to do it. I got sick of watching jiu-jitsu and people just getting points and installing. I thought, fuck this. How do you change this, man? And I looked into it and we did a bit of work in it. We even did a clock. We even created the clock with the money coming down. A digital clock with money.
Why didn't you do it?
Time. There's only so much one man can do. So there you go. You've got an exclusive. Put it out there and let's see who runs with it. And let's see if we get some credit for the fact that we told them what to do.
Well, that's it. Well, look, we both get an ownership stake in this. I think that's only fair, right?
There you go, man. There you go.
Listen, I know you got another call. Do you read any book that's had an impact on you throughout your career? Any book that you've kind of gone, yeah, that's a really good read, or something that's made an impact on you?
Yeah, there's been a few. A Long Way from Penny Apples.
Ah, okay. Yes. Bill Cullen, back in the day. Yeah.
Bill Cullen. That's a book that stuck with me for... my early days. I'll always remember that book. It's always stuck in my head.
Brilliant. Mm. Graham, you're coming back to Dublin. Just give us a reminder on the date again.
April 29th. We'll be back at the Three Arena. Tickets are available on cagewarriors.com. And yeah, we're looking for a big special return to get all the Irish fans back out and give them a big taste of the new, highly improved Cage Warriors since they saw it back in Ireland, in Dublin. It was 2014, it might have been with it.
Wow. Okay. So it's been a while. Yeah. You gonna be over?
I'll be over for it.
Cool. I'll see you there. Graham, thank you for coming on the pod.
Thank you very much for having me, buddy. Look after yourself.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Graham. He's a really interesting character. You can check out Cage Warriors. It's coming to the Three Arena in next month. Wherever you're listening, whether it's Spotify or Apple, hit subscribe. You'll get notified when we drop new pods, and it does help the pod to grow, and I do appreciate it. If you're on YouTube, click subscribe and click the like button. I'll see you back here in a couple of days.